You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, and we've got Ryan Dempster later in the hour. We've got Ray Ferraro calling in just a moment. We've got a Monday nighter tonight, Bears at Rams, and I'm seeing that the line is moving a little bit. Rams were favored by 6. I think it's up to 6.5, and some people wondering if that means Khalil Mack is injured. Maybe he won't play. If he does play, is he at 70%, 80%? Because he is a machine.
Yeah, you know? I love him as a player. He's ferocious.
Oh, he's ferocious. That's a perfect word for him. He comes off that line, and he is going to hit something.
Yeah.
He's going after somebody and something. Like, you look at Brady and the way he played yesterday, and then you consider where he was, you know, a week and a half before that in Chicago, where Khalil Mack was just beating the hell out of him.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Brady just couldn't do anything. In the second half, Khalil Mack just decided, you're not winning. We're going to win, and that's precisely what ended up happening. So we'll see what that means tonight, because if he does play, you got him up against Aaron Donald. Those are the two, you know, biggest, most disruptive players maybe in football right now.
Yeah. I think Mac's playing. I just saw the walk-in here on TSN, and he was walking in.
Hopefully,
you know, a lot of times if a guy is struggling, they won't be on, like, the team bus. They may be down there early getting treatment or whatever, but I'm quite certain I just saw Mack walking in with the rest of his troops, so I would argue that he's playing.
Okay.
Which is a good sign, you know.
Let's hope he's there, because, again, him and Aaron Donald is a sight to see, man. That's must-see TV if you're into defensive football. And that's going to be a good game tonight. I mean, the Bears, I don't think the Bears are as good as their record would indicate that they are. I think they're 5-1.
Right.
But, hey, you know, you play who you play and you find a way. And it's been Trubisky, Foles.
Yeah.
But the Rams have been very impressive.
Like, Who's the best team this year? Who's the best team in the NFL right now? If you had to bet on one team right now, because there's some teams that have really good records.
Yeah.
But you're maybe not believing.
I'd still go Kansas City. I'd still go with the champs. Like, you look at the way they played defensively yesterday.
Right.
Like, Mahomes has had some off weeks, and they've still found a way to win. That is terrifying, because he is going to click. He's been in the league for 3 years, 2 years as a starter. It's almost like he's already bored with the regular season. And that division is so bad. You know, Vegas is 3-3. I think they're kind of in the hunt, but they're not going to catch Kansas City, clearly. And the Chargers and Denver are done, more or less. So they're going to be on cruise control the rest of the year. And I think as a result, you're going to focus more on Pittsburgh, who deserves a ton of credit and a ton of love. They are legit. I just mentioned Donald and Mack. Like, Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, those two are machines on that defensive line in Pittsburgh. They are loaded with talent on both sides. Minka Fitzpatrick was a great pickup a year ago. He's performed well for them. So Pittsburgh's in that chat. Baltimore's in the chat. Kansas City's in the chat. I think the Packers are in the chat. I think the way they responded, albeit against Houston, but without Bakhtiari, their left tackle, without Aaron Jones, they just put a clinic on down there yesterday.
Well, and your buddy Aaron Rodgers is feeling good about it. I didn't see any dancing from him yesterday. Did you see any dancing?
No,
maybe
he avoided
his lesson.
He avoided the ravishing Rick Rude dance after a touchdown.
And Watt looked defeated at the end of the game yesterday.
Yeah. I hope they get him out of there. You know, like, he's a lifer down there, and he's kind of got the Jonathan Taves kind of vibe, like, although without Super Bowls. But best player in franchise history, clearly. Truly one of the all-time great defensive players. First ballot, walk-in Hall of Famer. But on a team that's 1-5, going nowhere.
Yeah, it's not.
Get him out if you can. If he wants out, get him out. And I could see the Packers kicking tires on that.
Well, listen, if he still has game, which you believe he has, then why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want to add somebody with that pedigree into your lineup too?
Yep.
Right? Like, you know, I think he still has it. Like, there's guys that just get stale in a real tough environment, and he seems like one. I think he's a good soldier. He's not gonna put his condo up for sale on Twitter or anything like
Probably
that.
Probably not. But it's the same situation. Cincinnati and Houston are carbon copies. I mean,
right.
Cincinnati's, well, I wouldn't say they're in a better spot, because Deshaun Watson's down there in Houston, but Joe Burrow looks good. You know, Burrow looks like they've got a quarterback of the future. Herbert looked really good with the Chargers. He looks like he's going to be good.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a ton of stories going on.
I thought it was fantastic yesterday. Is it DK Mahomes?
DK Metcalf.
I'm sorry.
He chased down.
I wish I could run like that. Like, I watched that highlight. It had to have been 50 times. It's a meme.
It is a meme. And immediately, like, he was chasing Buda Baker. And Baker can fly.
He can fly.
That's not some, like, nose tackle. You know what I mean? Like, Baker could probably run like a 4.6 40, 4.5 40, it looked like. You know, maybe not, but 4.7 at most.
Right.
And Metcalf, that is just the epitome of work ethic, determination. Oh. And then they hold them, right, and they don't score any points. That was an incredible ball game last night. Kyler Murray, he is not getting the Mahomes treatment because he doesn't have the stats as Mahomes from 2 years ago. He's not getting the Jackson treatment because, again, doesn't have quite the stats. But he's just below them in terms of second-year quarterback, making his mark, winning big games. I think I believe they're in a playoff spot right now or close to it. And that was a massive win against Seattle, who are the cream of the crop in the NFC West.
Yeah.
But you're right, Metcalf doing that. And in a way, you know, it was the right move. It was a great move. It was an inspiring move. But it highlights every other wideout and every other running back in football on any turnover, because 95% of the time you just kind of quit on the play.
Yeah, just gone.
Yeah, you're like, well, that's not my – I didn't throw the interception. Tell the quarterback to go tackle the guy. You know? And
you're right.
I know every coach around the league is using that as an example. If DK Metcalf did it, you can do it. You can, make sure you don't quit on a play.
I just wish I had that type of athletic ability. See him run
close
like that. Like, I don't know. I've never been able to run. I'm not a great runner and anything like that. It was just, I don't know why I thought it was inspiring.
It was inspiring. It's not going to change anything in my life. I was inspired for a split second, and now I'm not inspired anymore.
I agree.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here is Ray Ferraro. Right, you got the new wheel. Are you inspired to run like DK Metcalf last night, or what?
If I could, I would.
Yeah.
I laughed how you described your inspiration, though. Yeah, like for half a second, you were inspired.
Yeah, I'm not inspired anymore.
Just think of this, Noodles. So, like, Hayes realizes he's going to be late for, like, you know, like to get on the air.
Yeah.
And so he's inspired to get there. And as soon as he gets there and says, hey, welcome back, he's not inspired anymore.
No, I'm done. My inspiration is short-lived, pretty much.
He's like, yeah, we're all on the air. We're fine. Yeah. It'll be good.
We made it.
I thought it was amazing. You know what I loved about it? I mean, like, clearly he's got the physical gift to do it, right? But which is a blessing in itself.
Right.
But somewhere along those 80 yards that he's running, he had to be going, this is kind of stupid, because I'm not going to catch him till like the 5 yard line. Then they're only 5 yards away.
Right.
Like, he still had to have the willpower to drive his legs. And what I found really interesting was, it was just a couple of weeks ago against Dallas. He got kind of embarrassed, right? Yeah. He should have scored and he didn't.
That's right.
And people were just ripping him. Like, how could he do this? He'll never live this down. And you're like, man, the guy's a rookie. Like, if he's a good player, he'll make another play somewhere along the line and never live this. Never's a long time. And then 2 weeks later, he's on every play for his effort. So he got kicked in the pants and he went, that's never happening again. I'm assuming he went, I will never be on that side of the highlight again. And what he did last night was just, like, that was incredible.
Yeah, it really was.
Did you guys see the big Larry Allen, the lineman?
Yeah, yep. That was even more amazing because he's like 320 pounds.
Big boy. How much does that big boy weigh?
Yeah. 300 if he's a pound, and chugging.
He was moving and shaking too. That should inspire you, Hayes.
That does.
That guy, that should inspire you longer than a second because he was moving.
Yeah.
And we forget how athletic these gentlemen are at any weight. Because, you know, we're sitting here on our couch and, you know, some guys are big guys, but you forget, like, a guy who's like 260 or 310 can run the speed. Like, it was amazing How big do you think is he? Is he 300?
Larry Allen? Oh yeah, yeah. I would be. I would say if he's not, he's 280, 290. I mean, we're splitting hairs.
What I love is when like a linebacker makes a play, and then they flash up, you know, the headshot of him, and you know, Texas A&M, you know, 5'11", 257. And you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, did you see how fast that guy was? Could you imagine getting hit by a guy that weighs 257 pounds running that fast?
Well, that's it, right? Like, you think of a guy like Ray Lewis or Brian Urlacher or, you know, those guys who were, like, middle linebackers and are built like compact trucks. Like, yeah. they're 6 feet. They can't be that tall, but they've got a low center of gravity. They're 5'11", 6 feet. 260, 1% body fat, and they hit to kill. You know, like they're like, we're taking on, because on the other side of it is a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, who is the same size and running at the same pace, and he's trying to hold on to the ball, and he finds a gap in the line, and he's going through, and the other guy's on the other side coming through to stop him. Like, it's just, that's why everyone says, like, if you haven't seen football live, it's not even seeing football live, it's hearing football live.
Yeah.
Like, you got to hear football live to understand how hard these guys are hitting each other and the size of these human beings.
Again, I like my coach. I like my coach for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you
like
on that.
You know, like, so you got a, you know, a 220-pound running back or 215-pound running back, and they're low and they're, you know, and they're, you know, like, just think of the energy that they have to have on both sides of the ball. Like, you know, you got to tackle with some anger. You got to run with edge, and then they come together. No, thank you.
It's a mentality, right? Like, it's a very small amount of people that can do it.
I'd like to be that Buffalo kicker with the eye black under one eye.
Yeah,
that would be me.
6 field goals, and he's the king of Western New York now. Because hey, you're kicking it through the upright. A win is a win is a win.
And Buffalo continues to just chip away.
Yep.
You know, they're right there. Like
but they're getting nervous in Buffalo Noodles. Like, you only beat, this is how bad the Jets are. You only beat the Jets by 8. And again, you can't register a touchdown, which they didn't. It's concerning. And Buffalo has been 5-2. It feels like every year they're 5-2 and they finish 6-10, 7-9. You know, they did that for 20 years.
So you're worried for Buffalo.
Well, I'm not as worried because the Pats, I think, are fading, right? So it's a different division. If it was still the Brady-Belichick Patriots, I'd be very concerned for Buffalo because they may only be a 9-win team. You know, they might, and that might be enough to win the division. Like 9-7 might win.
Speaking of Brady, did you see the Peyton Manning going over white?
Outstanding.
Oh, my gosh. That guy, his – I don't know what it is, but it just cracks me up to no end to listen to him being like his timing, his comedic timing. It, you know, he knows it's the fifth read. He's been running the play since 2000.
Right.
That's why he wouldn't have broke into the wrong guy's house. Like, who writes that stuff?
It's so good. It's so well done. And that's why ESPN was willing to pay him $20 million a year or whatever to get into the booth. Everyone wants Peyton Manning because they know – A, he's as smart as everyone else, if not smarter. He knows every single play that's ever been drawn up in the history of football. And he's got a sense of humor. You know, he's self-deprecating. He'll goof on guys. And he can goof on guys. And, like, Brady's not going to be like, hey, relax, Peyton. You know, he'll laugh, too. It's Peyton Manning. Peyton can say whatever he wants. You know?
If he didn't break into the wrong house that looked like Byron Leftwich's, he wouldn't have had to promise the guy he could call the plays.
It was so good. It's so good online. We were talking last hour, you know, because we're kind of in wait and see mode with the NHL and the schedule. And I kind of am sensing or thinking, reading the tea leaves, that this is going to play out kind of like baseball did. I just hope it's not as volatile publicly. And I get the impression like they're trying to avoid that because Larry Brooks, I guess, cracked the case or whatever and wrote that piece yesterday about the GM call last week. But Brooks reported that Bettman had told all the GMs, like, don't say a word to anyone. So they're trying to keep everything in-house. They're trying to work out all the details. But with baseball, it turned out after the fact, once we knew what the schedule was going to be, Rob Manfred basically tipped his hand and said, I always knew it was going to be 60 games. You know, it was just a matter of getting there. And for whatever reason, they allowed each other to bicker at each other publicly, and it was a PR nightmare. I kind of feel like the same thing's going to happen here, Ray, with the NHL. Like, they know they're not playing 82. They know it's going to be, like, 60 games or whatever, and it's like you got to play this dance, and now we're trying to figure it out, and it's like just get there. Tell us it's going to be 60. You're going to start on January 10th, and let's start playing here.
You know what, Brian? I think they would if they knew they could. Mm-hmm. The problem is you can set a date, and it's really just something on the calendar because right. This is all going to get determined, like the length of season and all that, not by the league. It's going to be whatever the virus is doing, whatever the governments are allowing as far as border crossing, whatever, you know, like whatever they're going to allow in the stadiums, if anybody. Like all that stuff is going to really determine, you know, what the final answer is. I can't believe that Gary Bettman will be as much or will be stumbling around as much as Rob Manfred did. Like Manfred screwed up at every turn. Mm-hmm. Like whether you agreed with the owners or the players, he never once came across like he was really in charge. And so whether he can keep enough owners, you know, tight to the message, whether they can do enough negotiating with the players to determine how much of the salary is going to get paid, you know, if all of it or part of it or whatever it's going to be, that's going to be a large portion, I think, of this time between now and whenever they announce what the season is going to be, is going to be trying to maneuver around behind the scenes as much as they can. Because baseball looked like a clown show.
Yeah, that was a mess. On both sides, like, too. The players are playing video games, and they're like, I'm not doing that. I'm not playing.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know. This was on both sides. Mm-hmm. But the leadership from the league has to at least project a plan.
Right.
Where it didn't seem like baseball ever had it. And yet here they are. They've somehow worked their way through, and they're gonna crown a World Series champion here pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean it's ended up well for baseball considering how big of a nightmare it was early. But you know, I keep coming back for me and thinking when I talk to guys in the league, they're all like the one common theme I've gotten from them is Groundhog Day. Like, Ray, you and I went through the lockout, I think, what was that, 94? I think that was.
Yeah.
Remember, we were training early, and then it kind of faded because we, you know, every day you just wanted information, and you're like, okay, what's happening? And mentally it was a struggle. I talked to some guys right now, and they're in shape, obviously. Guys are in shape nowadays. They're going to be in shape regardless. But, you know, I know January 1st is a placeholder as far as a date, but the guys I talked to are like, yeah, it'd be nice to just know, like, hey, we're starting this date. I can work backwards from that. But it's almost like it's a wait and see. And they went through it already. Like, the 24 teams have gone through that wait and see. And let's see how it goes. And some teams stumbled out of the gate. You know, I don't think everyone was in great shape the minute that they got into the bubble and started playing. Because there were some guys, I think, that got fatigued mentally trying to – like almost waiting
amp yourself
for like
up,
yeah,
right?
I feel like that may happen here again leading up to it. I know it's out of people's hands, but like the players I talked to are like, yeah, you know, I'm skating, I'm working out, I'm doing that, but you can tell there's not that excitement because they don't have something to work toward, like a concrete date.
Well, I know a couple of guys that a few weeks ago they were skating three times.
Yeah.
And then they went, oh, this is stupid. And they put their gear away, and then they just started skating again. You know, like they stopped for a couple of weeks. They're like, why am I skating?
Yeah. Right.
Like we're months away from needing to skate. At least they know that. But just to what you say, Jamie, it's like it all seems kind of pointless, except they know it's not pointless.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I got to be in shape. Well, when? I don't know. And they all know nobody has an answer. Like, they can ask whoever they want. The trainer can't tell them. The coach can't tell them. Their agent can't tell them. Heck, the government can't tell them.
Right.
And so it's, I think it's unfortunately something they're going to have to deal with. And I think we saw, like, coming into the bubble there, you know, Boston was a mess. But when they got in there, they played poorly. They had a couple of guys that were sick and a couple of guys that were banged up. And they never probably got things – like, they were the best team in hockey in the middle of March.
Yeah.
And then when they came back, they weren't the best team.
No.
And that could very well be the case for whatever this upcoming season is. Remember, when we came back, out of nowhere, the New Jersey Devils won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, you're right.
In 95. They had – Jacques Lemaire had the best system, the best the best players to execute that system, and they smothered us all, checked us into oblivion, and then they won the Stanley Cup. And so somebody will have a plan. Somebody will be more prepared or better prepared than others. And heck, enough, if it's a 48 or 60-game season, if you play your first 30 games really well, you're probably locked in.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's exactly that's what's happened the last couple of times. There have been shortened seasons, right? Like the Leafs punched their ticket in 2013. They hadn't been in the playoffs in 8 years.
And were they, like, technically on paper, did you think they were a playoff team going into that season?
I wasn't thinking playoffs at that point, not based on the previous couple of years, no. And I remember it was basically like you just said, where they had a good start. They just kept chipping away. And then all of a sudden it was like mathematically they're going to get there. You know, they just – couple of ties, maybe a win or two against a bad team, and you're in. And, you know, in a shortened year, generally the two ends of the spectrum separate that much more. Where if you're a bad team in a shortened season and you know it 15 games in, you're like,
oof,
we're just going to mail. It's only 25 more games. What are we doing? You know, like, we don't really have – like, it seems like there's going to be even more of a separation or potentially – I get the impression like the Flames think that Vancouver has won the last 5 Stanley Cups based
they
on
got 4 guys
their
from
offseason.
I know, right? What's it like out there? Because I saw it was trending a few times. What do they call it? The Calgary Canucks, right? Because it's
right.
Like you've got
one of my buddies tweeted. Sorry, Jamie. Yeah. One of my buddies tweeted, look for transactions next week. The Flames might sign Finn. That's the mascot.
Yeah. They're scouting him right now. They're having meetings about that.
Yeah, I saw
but
that.
I got to tell you, I know teams didn't have remarkable amounts of money, but Calgary spent big on Markstrom and Tanev. Mm-hmm. And then they've signed about 4 or 5 guys, all on real low-end contracts, that if 3 of them pan out, they've really improved their team.
Yeah.
Like, I'm telling you guys, when Josh Levo got hurt, he was well on his way to being a legit middle six forward. And then he got shoved into the boards from behind and broke his kneecap. It was a bad hit. And he lost the rest of his year. At 875, I think that's a terrific signing for Calgary. Like, I think it's really good.
Yeah. No, he found himself in Vancouver. Like, he would perform well. Levo did when he was in Toronto. He just didn't get the opportunity. Babcock wouldn't put him in.
He was buried at the – well, wasn't he the guy who sat out like 70 games? No, that was Frankie Corrado.
Corrado was the one that – Frankie got hit the hardest.
Yeah, Corrado was first, and then it was Levo.
Yeah, Levo went a long time in between games.
Those guys were – oh, no, and then – okay, where did Justin Hall fit into that?
Hall was the same thing.
He was the same thing.
Was he the same year as Levo?
No, I think
no,
he was
Levo
the year after.
Had been gone because Levo. I think Dubas.
Those guys were practicing their ass off and never playing.
Were. Yeah, and I think Dubas told Levo, like, if you don't get in to start the year, we'll ship you out. And he I think followed through on that and then flipped them to Vancouver. So, you know, that was a year. I'm losing sight of time here because of everything.
Yeah.
But
well, I'm just
I don't think
at...
they overlapped the Hall and Levo, and definitely not the Corrado stuff. That was a couple of years ago. But Levo just never found a way to get into the lineup. But when I would see him in Vancouver, I'm like, hey, he looks like, you know, he's an NHL player for sure.
Oh, he was a legit middle six guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then, you know, when he got hurt, that really was a blow to Vancouver. Their depth really took a hit.
Which is surprising they couldn't sign him for $900,000.
Well, that's what nobody can quite figure this out, because – he was asking for just over $1 million. The Canucks wanted it to be under $1 million, and then he signed in Calgary for $875,000.
Yeah,
it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah,
Well, and if he can give you, he had 10 last year. If he could give you 10 to 15 goals in a full season averaged out, like that's third line minutes on the wing. Like he's a big, strong guy. I do remember him playing some penalty kill and stuff with the Leafs. I don't know what that would be the case in Calgary. But like you said, Ray, these are low value signings. Like you can bury that in the minors if you don't. If he doesn't make your team, same thing with Jimmy Vesey in Toronto. There's been some nice signings throughout the league, but I think Calgary had a couple. Dominic Simone was a guy who they signed out of Pittsburgh, like low value, and maybe there's upside there. And if it doesn't, yeah, you've got to put some money in the minors. Or if it sounds like it's a shortened season and there's no AHL like to match it.
It'll be
on the taxi squad, exactly.
Yeah, I think most teams are looking at that, and they should be taking advantage, especially the ones with owners who are willing to spend a little more money. Anyway, we got to fly, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05.
Talk to you then. See you guys.
There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days continue with rates from 0% and free winter tires with every in-stock new vehicle purchase in October. MapleToyota.com. A mishap with the Cowboys Zoom that is just outstanding and very typical of their season. We'll tell you about that. And Ryan Dempster on the World Series. Can the Rays push it to 7? We'll get you that answer and more next. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Ryan Dempster coming up in just a moment. One of the all-time great Canadian ballplayers. MLB Network analyst. World Series with an off night tonight and Game 6 tomorrow. And the Cowboys, we have been... we've been carving up the Cowboys pretty nicely, all season. And we like to do it on a weekly basis, regardless if they're winning or losing. And now it's really ugly. I mean, they got roasted against an awful Washington team. And Andy Dalton's in the concussion protocol. If he can't play, they're under their third-string quarterback, who I think they took in the 7th round out of, like, you know, Concordia University or something like that. I don't even know where this guy went to school. But it's not going to be good for the Cowboys. And it just continues to unravel because I guess Mike Nolan, who's their defensive coordinator, he was set to go on a conference call with the media. And they had to put it on hold because he had Tabasco sauce on his fingers and he got some in his eye. And now he's just basically – we've all been there. I've been in that spot before as a kid. I haven't done that as an adult. But, you know, I can picture this happening. It's just so typically Dallas Cowboys right now, though.
Well, and it's how things are going. That's basically, if you had to point to one thing and say, how are the Cowboys, how is their season going? Basically, you could point to that in the Zoom call and go, take a look at that.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's it. That's
it's Tabasco in your eye.
The 2020 Dallas Cowboys can be summed up with Tabasco to the eye of Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator.
That is.
And I listen, as someone who likes – you know, spicier food or, you know, Tabasco. I don't put it on a ton of stuff, but I've been there. I've done that. You need to be cautious. Like, you need to understand that if that gets anywhere close to your eye, you are out of commission for a long time.
Okay, but here's the thing, though, Brian. Was he having a Zoom with the media or with his, like, with players? Like,
good question.
Because if you're having a Zoom with media, like, can you put the plate of food away, like, take the 10 minutes. Is he stuffing his face as he's having the meeting? Like,
all it says is conference call. So I don't even think it is a Zoom, which also, like, you know, if you got a wonky eye going, you can still get on a call and answer some questions. I mean, I guess easy for me to say, but I don't think Tabasco sauce in the eye is like a medical emergency to the point where the paramedics are showing up or anything like that. So you got to flush it out and wait. You know, you got to blink a lot. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's not going to be a good position to be in, but I'm assuming it was with the media, because if it wasn't, why would it get out?
Yeah,
you know, unless you truly have a mutiny on your hands where players are like, get this, dude, like they're calling up media members saying this guy can't even keep the Tabasco sauce on the plate. This is us in a nutshell right now in Dallas. Yeah. So I would assume the coordinator was set to speak with the media, and
I've played on teams where everything's gone wrong. And it's tough because you try and get it back on the rails, but it's almost like the harder you try, the worse it gets. Now it seems like there's the players versus coaches. That's never a good scenario.
No, that doesn't get on the rails either, right? Like,
no.
I have never witnessed a scenario in pro sports where you had a team that was so dysfunctional to the point where anonymously tipping off the media about their dysfunction behind the scenes, calling out the coaching staff, a Super Bowl winning coach who's been on the job for like 6 months, and saying this guy is inept and has no idea what he's doing, Mike McCarthy. I've never seen that clear up. And then all of a sudden you run off 5 in a row and camaraderie's through the roof. The boys love each other and boom, we're pursuing a championship. It has never happened to my understanding. Gets worse.
You're right. I would love to hear maybe some stories from the St. Louis Blues locker room when they were last place. Was it?
Yeah. But was that dysfunction or?
No, I think there was injuries.
That's a good question.
But all I'm saying is, where there was injuries, inconsistency, where, you know, their top players were playing terrible, they made the goalie change and they fired the coach. So Dallas is not going to recover out of this, by all accounts, with that roster, correct?
Mm-hmm.
They may have to do something.
Right. They're not the Blues in disguise, right? Like, they're not actually the Kansas City Chiefs, but it's just everything's unraveling and you throw a new coach in there and a couple guys get back from injury and all of a sudden, boom.
But
they're not
hear me
good
out.
Enough.
Could a new coach and a new quarterback change the fortunes of the Dallas Cowboys, especially with how weak that division is?
Well, yes. Within the confines of the NFC East, the answer would be yes. If you put, you know, although Mike McCarthy is not a bad coach.
Yeah, like you have lots of history tracking his success.
A good coach that, as we've documented many times, in Green Bay the last couple of years, there was a bit of an issue between him and Rodgers based on play calling, based on maybe his conservative nature, based on the predictability of the offense, which can happen when you've been there for a decade, you know, a decade plus. But Mike McCarthy is no one's fool. You know, he's not some awful coach that overnight just forgot how to coach. The issue is much deeper than that. But, yes, to answer your question, within the confines of the NFC East, you put a good quarterback in that division, they're going to win, right? Because Carson Wentz has been he's run very hot and cold. They're you know, Kyle Allen's playing in Washington. Daniel Jones is tripping over the 20-yard line with the Giants, and Barkley's out for the year. They've got injury problems with New York.
Right.
You put a competent quarterback in that division, they're probably going to win. And that's why I think even what I just said about Carson Wentz, I think Philly will win because I think he's the best of the bunch.
Right.
But you can't expect that to happen in Dallas. They're not going to trade for Matt Ryan, I don't think. Why would you? I mean, Ryan comes with a ticket, and I believe yours on a steal. You still got Dak when he returns from injury.
Agreed.
World Series 3-2 Dodgers, off night tonight, game 6 tomorrow to tee it up. We're joined now by longtime MLB pitcher, good Canadian boy from the MLB Network. Here's Ryan Dempster. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, guys. How are you, man?
Good, we're doing well. We've been breaking down the weekend. I mean, this series has been outstanding. I mean, there's been a lot of great, great moments and great, great theater. I think the Dodgers deserve to be up 3-2, you know, through 5 games. I think they've been the better team. And we've been so focused on Kershaw, clearly. And he pitched well yesterday. He pitched well in game 1. Where do you stand on the playoff Kershaw narrative now that we've seen what we've seen out of him the past 2 starts?
Yeah, I'm really glad that it's kind of it took a positive turn. You know what I mean? Like, people just been hammering him, and it's always like this thing about Clayton Kershaw and he can't pitch in the playoffs. And, you know, I don't feel like that's entirely true, although he has had games. I totally understand that. And he has those games that have been tough, but to see that happen was, you know, makes me feel good. Cause I love everything about this guy. You know, he's a stud. He's everything good about baseball. And so to see him go out there in the World Series and go 2-0, you know, and really handily manage both those games is just great, because he doesn't deserve all that stuff. A lot's fallen on him, you know, later in the game type outings. You go out there, beat through five or six shut innings and then give up a 4 spot. It's like, oh, Clayton Kershaw pitched bad. Well, no, I mean, he's not getting rocked, but he just didn't pitch well. So he's pitched well most of this whole postseason, and that's good to see.
Yeah, and I said earlier, Ryan, I don't think this 2020 chapter has been written yet, because I think if the Rays win tomorrow night, we might see Kershaw coming out of the bullpen like we have in years past in game 7. You know, I could see Buehler giving them 5, maybe 6, and then they're like, okay, what are we doing here? Do we get Clayton up? Do we get him warm? Do we get him in? And I think Roberts will probably do that. if that's the situation, if it's a close ball game. And I hope he does that, because then I think that truly would exorcise the demons. I find with Kershaw and the playoff narrative, yeah, a lot of it's the starts, clearly, but a lot of it also is him coming in the seventh inning and getting rocked on short rest. And if he can slash that out and they find a way to win in seven and he performs in like the seventh or eighth inning or whatever, I think that would basically end the narrative.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's had like this incredibly kind of up and down narrative, right? Like, it's been, he pitched really well in 2013 in the first series, and he struggled in the second series, and you know, it's kind of had that throughout his playoff. 2015, he was really good. In 2016, you know, he was terrible in the first round. He was good against the Cubs. He just had a bad game in game six. And, you know, he's kind of had these up and downs. And you're right. It's like the short rest game gets him, the come-in relief and give up a couple home runs against the Nationals type thing. Like, there's been these things that have kind of stung him. But at the end of the day, he's 13-12. You know, the ERA is not the greatest. It's a 4-1. But you're talking about the best teams out there. And he's thrown 189 innings with over 200 punches. He has most punch outs by any pitcher in Major League history in the playoffs. So, you know, I know people want to knock. I totally understand what you're saying. Maybe he comes in a big situation, matches up well against a lefty that struggles against the big breaking ball and gets a big punch out in a big situation. But I don't even think he has to do that. I think if they win the World Series and he went 2-0 in the World Series, enough. Enough getting all over the guy. You know, it's like we're sitting there, we're just trying to find the bad thing about him. You know, but that's what happens when you get paid $30 million to pitch once every 5 days. People are going to be really critical, but I think he's answered the bell this year. He did it in the first round, and he did it for sure in the World Series, and good for him.
Well, and he's savvy enough to know that Manny Margot was going to try to be a hero yesterday and steal home. And that was a scenario watching it live. I'm like, wow, he's really doing it. Like, he's going for it. And I guess he had the green light and cash. Said afterwards, you know, we promote smart baseball, and for whatever reason, he thought that was a smart play. But you've been on the mound, you know, millions of times, and have you ever encountered someone trying to steal home? And if you can put yourself in the shoes of Kershaw, who's a lefty, do you think it would have even dawned on him that he was going? Like, why would you ever think a guy's going to steal home, especially when the Rays kind of had Kershaw on the ropes in that moment?
Yeah, I was beyond impressed. In that moment, on that stage, in the situation that it was, imagine for everybody at home listening, if you tonight, you get done dinner and you go, you know, have a little stress reliever in the bathroom, and you come out of the bathroom and your friend, your brother, your significant other, whatever it is, goes, bah, when you walk out the door. That's the equivalent of what that is, and he didn't jump. He didn't flinch. He stepped off and he threw a dart to home plate. Like, you know, you're in this, everything's fine, everything's comfortable, and here comes one of the most uncomfortable moments. And for him to not panic, that right there is experience, that right there is confidence. Whether he thought about it or not, I don't know if he was aware of it, but I don't know if I could have handled the same situation. You know, when you hear that step off, you immediately get jelly-legged, and you want to try and like, oh, what do I do? But he just handled it all so well, and really what might be the deciding moment in the series, because if he steals that base, or who knows what happens after that. So just impressive stuff in that moment.
We haven't talked to you in a bit. I just wanted to ask you a question about bat flipping. I know a former pitcher, I was a goalie in the NHL, and I hated it when guys would score on me and ham it up or you know, show me up a little bit. Where do you stand on, it seems now that it's become the norm with the younger generation, the younger guys coming up. Are you all right with it, or you still got a little old school in you?
Well, yeah, I'm always going to have a little old school in me. Like, I was telling somebody, the 25-year-old in me would have tried to drill everybody that bat flipped. but the game's changed. It's evolved, right? But why do they bat flip? They bat flip because they're emotional, right? They hit a big home run in a big situation. I'm a big believer in saving the bat flip for the Joey Bats type moment where it really means something. You know, don't bat flip me when you're, hey, great, you're still down 4-3. What's with the bat flip? I don't get that. That, to me, that's look at me. Now I get you're trying to fire your team up. My only concern with the bat flip, and this is what how my feelings are about it. They're showing emotion, and that's okay. That's totally fine. They're showing happiness, joy, excitement, you know, determination, whatever their emotion is. Understand that there's somebody 60 feet, 6 inches away that's going to have emotions too. And if we're saying that you don't have to suppress your happy, joyful celebration emotion, why do I have to suppress my anger, frustration, I'm mad at you emotion because you're throwing the bat to the moon? So just understand that if I throw a pitch down and away on the corner, the one I practice in the bullpen day in, day out, and you hit it opposite field, 10 rows deep, and you bat flip me, that I, as a cat and mouse game, as the chess match pitcher trying to keep you off balance, might just pitch you inside next time. I'm not trying to hit you, but it might get in there. And if you don't feel like moving away, because apparently you don't care about moving off the plate because you're taking a pitch that's my moneymaker down and away and you're hitting it out. So just understand that it's okay for us all to have, if we're going to embrace the positive emotion, it's okay if somebody has a frustrated emotion. So, and it, you know, no head hunting, none of that stuff. I'm not for that one bit, but I'm just saying you're going to have consequences. Some guys might not care. They want to strike you out and just move on. And some guys might have a problem with it. And that's okay too. We live in a world where we always talk about our feelings nowadays and mental health is so important. So if we're going to have feelings, let everybody have their own feelings. As long as we're not headhunting people, we're not trying to hurt people, and we're still having the pitching matchup, the pitcher-hitter cat-and-mouse game, nothing wrong with that. You know, we tell glory stories of Bob Gibson and Nolan Ryan and Don Drysdale, but I can't be that way. I can't have the ability to just brush you off the plate if I feel like you're getting a little aggressive. So that's where I stand on it. You know, save them for the big moments. You know, you win the game, go ahead, but just always remember that there's kids in the stands watching you, and they love to emulate their superstar, you know, heroes out on the field. And, you know, you're always setting an example, but have fun. I get it. I've evolved, you know, I've grown older, and I appreciate what these young kids are doing. Just understand there's another guy on the other side.
Yep, I think that's well put. Enjoy tomorrow night. It's going to be a fun one. Hopefully we get one on Wednesday night as well, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Ryan.
Heck yeah, guys. Game 7. Let's get there, man. That'd be so much fun. Nothing better. Morton and Bueller. Let's go.
Let's push forward, buddy. We can will this into existence. We'll make it happen. Thank you, Ryan.
All right, guys.
Ryan Dempster from the MLB Network and longtime MLB pitcher, good Canadian boy from BC. And yeah, that would be my vote. You know, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm just looking for more games.
Yeah, I'd love a Game 7 too. I think it'd be fantastic.
World
it's just
Series.
Great theater. It's great theater.
And you know what? We talked a little bit about it earlier, the fans in the stands, and then we got off track. We never really – I never gave you an answer. I really have learned to appreciate the theater and the production of finding fans in the stands that I always took for granted. I never really thought of. But the fact that they're there, I think it's added to my viewing experience. I really believe that because there are Dodger fans, like, chewing their fingernails off. Like, it's actually happening. They're there. Those that are not wearing a mask in the stands. Those that, when there's a big hit or a big home run, they find a Dodger fan who's going crazy. It's little stuff like that that adds to the production of the whole theater that we were missing for the longest time. And it means more to me now because it disappeared. I never thought it would disappear. You know, I never thought it would be gone. Whoever thought we'd be watching all these sporting events with no fans?
Yeah.
So I do really appreciate that the World Series – even if it's only 10,000 people, 12,000, 15, they're real people, real fans that are dedicated, that have been along for the ride, and you can see it. You can see the stress.
Yeah, you're right.
And we didn't get that in the bubble. We didn't get it in Orlando. We did not get that in Toronto or in Edmonton.
No, but that was,
glad it's here now.
You're right. That was like, you know, the bubble in Edmonton, the bubble in Orlando, like they went in there and they wanted to complete business. Where,
yeah,
you
which
know,
they
the
had
NFL,
to do.
You're right. The NFL, Major League Baseball, has gone about it a different way. I believe in Denver yesterday they allowed 7.5% capacity.
Mm-hmm. It's something, you know. And those are regular season games. This is the World Series, though. Like, I don't ever want to see a Stanley Cup final with no fans again, ever. And I don't want to see the Super Bowl with no fans. I don't want to see the NBA Finals with no fans. You know, we did it because you had to, and I credit them for it, and they pulled it off. Let's never try it again. Let's never do it again. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the Monday Nighter. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. The props on the Monday Nighter. Jerry Goff over the number total pass completions tonight. Robert Woods over the number total receiving yards and over the number total sacks. I think both sides of the ball are going to be running for their lives at times. Throw down 20, you can score 105. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. Fun one tonight. And then we got the World Series tomorrow. We got some stuff cooking here, Noodles.
I agree. I think it'll be a great one tonight. It'll be all eyes on it. You think Jerry Goff's going to pull it off?
Yeah, I think the Rams win tonight. Yeah, the Rams, they've been impressive. They've been good. See, I'm on the Rams tonight. O was here today. He'll be back tomorrow at 4. And we are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the game tonight. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com. You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.